The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 2nd of July, 2021. On the podcast today, Paul Mines, CEO of Biome Technologies, discusses their trading update and their ambition to take a substantive global position in selling bioplastics. Plus, Derek Liu, CEO of Blue Star Capital, covers some of the highlights from their interim results and progress from their investments. Plus, Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about what's happening in the 5 years since Brexit vote and UK companies being the target of takeovers. And, as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs. You can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, and you can see lots of other content. And there's one there, an all active asset cap to raise 150 million at 80 pence. There's an article there on Omega Diagnostics, seeks US FDA authorization. There's also one there on Microsec Systems and videos. Paul Hill, Cake Box Guys. Check that out. And COVID-19 index, biggest rise today, Your Gene Health at 4% to 12.75. Biggest faller is Symphony Environmental Technologies, down 4.3% to 16.75. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Mines, Chief Executive Officer of Biome Technologies. BIOM is the ticker there. Paul, thanks for joining me.
Very good morning, Justin.
Yeah, and it's nice of you to come on, because I reached out to you and it was a trading update yesterday, which didn't go as, you know, shareholders expect. It was a bit of a curveball, but we'll talk about that and you explain a bit more about that and also, you know, a few other things in the business going on. Before we do, for people maybe not familiar with the company, Paul, can you just give a brief summary as to what Biome's all about, please?
Yes, of course. The main investment proposition behind the company is our bioplastics business. And we buy in natural inputs and we make bio-based and biodegradable plastics. You know, the outputs of what we make are small granules of plastics that go into a variety of applications, from agricultural products to coffee packaging, coffee pods, etc. So these are materials that are much more environmentally friendly than the current petrochemical materials that are on the market. And at the end of their life, they compost down to carbon dioxide and a few minerals.
Yeah,
that's the sort of main proposition. We also have another division in the company called the RF business, and that's a business that makes optical fiber furnaces and other specialty electrical products for a variety of global markets.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose that the sort of fast-growing sort of blue sky opportunity is the bioplastics side. And you know, I read about your growth here, and I was very excited about it. But because it seems to me now, I mean, the publicity of the pandemic has taken over. Before the pandemic, we were all about climate change, all about plastics in the ocean. And so obviously the problem has gone away. So it's probably getting bigger every day, pretty much, the amount of plastics going into the ocean. So this is a massively hot sector, and it's going to be for a long time, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, there are two significant drivers. One is about the waste and the damage we're doing to the plastic, to the planet with our plastic waste. So that needs to be sorted out, and compostable plastics are right at the heart of that. And the second part of it is about the climate change, is carbon emissions. And if we continue to make plastics from petrochemical sources, that carbon ends up in the atmosphere. So, but if we make them from biological sources, we embed that carbon in the plastics. And when they're re-released by burning or natural action, we're just returning the carbon to the atmosphere we've already taken out. So there are two substantive drivers, you know, of long-term drivers that mean, in my perspective, this market is only going to grow. And it has been for the last several years. And, you know, we're seeing increasing demand for our products, even through the pandemic.
Yeah, it's very encouraging. And the growth I looked at, you know, this was pre this trading update. Like I said, fast growing, you know, a very small business at the moment, fast growing. I think 51% is predicted for revenue year on year, and then 40% next year, and you've got 40% targets. But then, of course, fast growing companies will always have hiccups when you're small companies because you've got minimal revenue streams. And so yesterday came out the trading update. It was a sort of second customer in this area. And just explain the background. What's happened here? And first of all, can you just confirm this is a delay, not a cancellation?
Very much a delay. You know, our customer set tend to be quite large customers. And we, as you say, we've got a relatively small portfolio of those customers, albeit it's growing quite fast. And this is a customer in the US who buys the filter from us that goes in the middle of a coffee pot.
Yeah.
It's quite a high value item. And this customer has, you know, is transitioning from an existing supplier across to our materials, you know, and we expected a certain rate of progress on that project this year. Indeed, they bought all the kit to make this transition earlier in the year and invested the capital with us. And then we started this transition project back in March. Unfortunately, just in the last few weeks, they've hit some technical problems within their facility, which means they don't have all the services, particularly this is around air supply, compressed air, to support this transition at the moment. Mm. It was something overlooked by, you know, someone in their business, but that now they need to correct it. It requires an engineering fix. It's going to take several months. And, you know, unfortunately, it just puts our expected ramp up with this customer back by a number of months. You know, I'm clear that the growth with this particular customer will resume, and it's a matter of time before that happens, and it's going to be a substantive piece of business for us when it gets to full rollout.
Yeah, yeah. And you'd think, actually, because they've invested in the equipment, and of course they're heading in the right direction environmentally, then they're not just going to backtrack, are they? You know, it's
be silly. This customer is very committed to having its portfolio of compostable plastics in its packaging. So there's no doubt that that's their direction of travel. It's just a question now of how fast they get there.
Yeah,
and we've now been quite conservative, given we've had this sort of pause while they'd have to do this engineering work. We've just been conservative about how fast they pick up again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so what you'd expect, next 2-3 months to have some kind of good news from that or not?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to sort of, you know, they've clearly got an engineering change to make. They're well into doing that work. But it's months, not years, correct?
Yeah, okay. And like you said, you are being conservative and you mentioned that your pipeline is growing. And so...
Correct. I think it's important that investors understand that, you know, even in this first 6 months of the year, you know, our pipeline of inquiries, the number of customers we're working with and you know, actually supplying to has increased.
Mm.
You know, I have no doubt this is a growing market. I have no doubt we've got the right set of products to grow in the market. You know, but it's this particular customer has set us back. And as we also said in our profits, in our trading update yesterday, one of the other challenges we've got at the moment is around sort of just the sheer logistics of moving materials around the world at the moment. And I don't think this will come as a surprise to anybody. People have heard about sort of container shipping being in a mess at the moment, you know, and we're getting significant delays. You know, one example is, we were trying to send some materials from Germany to the US. They were supposed to leave Germany in March. They didn't actually leave till the end of June. So whereas we normally expect this to sort of be a 3-week process of shipping material, it turned into a 3 or 4 month process. And that's, unfortunately, that's sort of common across the board at the moment. And so some of our other sort of customers that are on a growth trajectory, you know, they're asking for our materials, but it just... frustrating at the moment. We just can't get the materials there.
Yeah, yeah. And this is really, but the odd thing is, you're right, even this morning I was looking at I think Haribo in Germany is having problems getting drivers and all that stuff, and there's logistics around the world everywhere. But I suppose as the pressure builds, then I thought, you know, naturally it'll have to sort of be sorted out and get faster. So yeah there's going to be a problem, you know.
I mean, I think the global shipping industry will sort itself out, and also, you know, ground transportation as well, you know, but I don't think that'll be within a month. You know, I think there are various views, you know, 6 to 9 months before that's really sorted out. Mm. You know, we are taking initiatives to try and sort of support ourselves within that. You know, we are trying to lay down more stock where we can. We are trying to sort of be a bit more flexible in how we think forward and make sure as we plan, we're trying to sort of plan for different levels of eventuality and make sure we've got the materials there if our customers move their requirements. But, you know, I think there will be a drag on our expected pace through this next 6 to 9 months while shipping is sorted out.
And I just read your updated broker note. Even with this, you know, sort of, like I said, this customer delaying, you're still achieving, they think, 18% growth this year, then back to above 40% next year. And this is absolutely. Even without new customers, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, we've still got customers approaching us for new business. Our existing customers still want to grow. We still believe we'll grow, as you said, sort of around 18% this year. So it's a question of just removing some of these roadblocks and that growth will resume.
Okay, so even though we had that update out, I mean, you are still, of course, you have to get news like that out, and it does, the share price does take a hit, but I'm just saying it's bouncing back sort of day. But you are now sort of still bullish on the outlook, you know, going forward.
Absolutely. Now, as we discussed earlier, this is the right sector. It's a sector that's only, the pressures are going to just keep it growing. We've got a set of products that are interesting. Our customer list is growing. You know, and as I sit here at my desk or as I visit customers, I can feel that pent-up demand. It's just, you know, that incredible frustration at the moment. We can't sort of get all the material to all the customers we need to. But, you know, I believe that will undermine, that will unwind over the coming months.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's got to go that way. I totally expected. And you got to, I mean, people have looked at this company and when I did a video, and they said, "So what's happened in the previous years?" And you got to understand. I mean, a lot of research and development and money and investment goes into creating your products, doesn't it? And now, do you think you are at that inflection point of commerciality in your company?
We very much do. You know, we've done a lot of background work. You know, we do research work with a number of universities in the UK, you know, and we're now getting a product portfolio that's really interesting. And I think what's also interesting now, as well, as we're beginning to get some leverage, though to begin with, a few years ago, we were developing each material for each new customer. Mm. We're finding that some of these materials we can now sell to multiple customers. So you can feel this momentum growing in the business as we apply those technologies to a variety of customers, not just one. Yeah. So, yes.
Excellent stuff. One person said, "Oh, hang on a sec, they're going to need to raise cash now." But I see the broker suggests, your broker suggests, you don't need to raise cash.
No, we don't. And if you look at the Allenby broker note, which can be found online, in fact, we've not moved our view of our cash position either at the end of this year or end of next year. And although we've sort of downgraded the sort of revenue growth, and what we've also seen through this period is slightly better margins than we expected, mm-hmm. and the cost base has been running slightly lower than we expected. So we're quite comfortable to sort of hold that view on cash.
Yeah, yeah. And just on the Stanelco RF technology side, I mean, it did take a hit in the pandemic. Are you seeing any green shoots there, any recovery there at all?
Yeah, without doubt. You know, the indicators, the main driver behind the Stanelco business is the fibre optic market. And you might have, we're all using Zoom and Teams, and we thought during the pandemic that might have pushed demand up. It didn't. For a while, what happened is the big telecoms companies stopped putting fibre in the ground because they couldn't because of the pandemic. But what we're seeing now is a real pickup in that demand. And we watch the industry stats. The price of optical fibre has gone up. The stock levels are going down. And customers are beginning to talk to us about expansion plans again, which just hasn't been the case in the last year or so. So we're not quite clear at what rate that will pick up, but all the indications we're getting of capital expenditure for the fiber optical market is back on the cards. And we're hoping that flows through into the business in the next year or so.
Marvellous stuff. Well, it's a short-term hiccup, but growth remains strong long-term. And what's your sort of longer-term ambition for the company then, Paul?
I think that really revolves around, you know, continuing to grow the bioplastics business fast. You know, and I think we can take a substantive global position selling these bioplastics. You know, at the moment, the price and the markets we're addressing are at the top end of packaging, sort of coffee packaging areas. But gradually over time, as the sort of the economics change around these materials and as demand continues to increase, you know, I see these type of materials accessing a much wider stream of packaging in other markets. You know, people can look at our website. We've got a big development project going on those plastic protectors around trees, which will take, you know, broaden our market space from predominantly around packaging, but into agricultural areas as well. So I just think this technology is in its infancy, you know, and we've got a long way to go. And I think Biome's right at the front of exploiting this technology.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But let's be honest, it's got to go one way, isn't it? Because the environment needs it to go that way.
Absolutely.
Okay, every day on the podcast, Paul, I highlight the top five most followed companies. You've been on that list, number one, for the last couple of days, actually. But to stay up there, please give us three quick reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Biome Technologies to their watch list, please.
Oh, absolutely. Number one, Biome is positioned in markets where growth is going to predominate in the next years. You know, this is a growth market and space to be. Two, sort of Biome have got the products to really address this market. We've spent a number of years sort of building a product portfolio and patent portfolio of interesting products for this space. You know, and our customers are pulling those products through right now. Three, you know, we've got an incredible team who are just, you know, who want to work in this space and are just committed to growing a business here. And, you know, and through that, I think we can deliver some really significant shareholder value over the coming years.
Excellent stuff. Paul, it's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin. Good to see you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Derek Liu, Chief Executive Officer of Blue Star Capital. BLU is the ticker there. Derek, thanks for joining me.
Justin, great to be with you.
Now, you just released your interim results, which they're always, you know, historical documents there, but it's good to chat about what you've achieved. And also, it's a chance to sort of, you know, get a bit of a look into the future, what you want to achieve and where you're going, and are things going as you planned. And we'll do that in a bit. But before, as always, if someone's listening right now, Derek, and maybe they're not familiar or they may have heard of you, but they don't know exactly what you do, can you explain what Blue Star Capital is about, please?
Justin, it's great to be with you again. Thanks for having us back. Always happy to talk about Blue Star Capital. We're the investing company with a portfolio of investments. So not a single point of failure, but a portfolio approach to investing in esports and other high growth sectors.
Excellent stuff. Okay. Well, let's get to, I mean, like I said, you are an investment company. You invest in very hot areas, hot companies growing. And as an investing company, I suppose what's the most important thing is your NAV, isn't it? Asset value. So let's go into that. How did you do over the last 6 months?
You know what? Thanks very much, Justin. We just recently released our interim earnings reports, and our NAV showed an increase. We increased our NAV from 5.9 million pounds in the previous period, our comparable period, to about 8.9 million pounds at the end of March. I think even more importantly, though, is NAV has increased even more since then. One of our portfolio companies, Dynasty Esports, completed a financing round that valued it at US 50 million post money, which took our investment value in Dynasty from about 1.3 million pounds to about 4 million pounds. So that brings our NAV to roughly 12 million pounds as we sit here today at the beginning of July.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you know, we've talked actually, you know, previously about Guild and Dynasty, however you pronounce it, in the esports section. And you've got, you know, quite a few other investments. So can you talk through some of the other ones, if you could, please, Derek?
Yeah, you know what, Justin, happy to. Our portfolio consists of about 11 companies. And you're right, we were very, very, very optimistic about the opportunities in esports. But we're also optimistic about the opportunities in some of the other high growth sectors, namely payments and mobile gaming. So let's talk about some of those companies today, if you want to, Justin.
Yeah, go for it.
On the payment side, Stoller. Stoller is the company that, for those that haven't followed Stoller, it uses finger vein technology as a biometric. And the magic of the finger vein is we've all got used our fingerprint on our iPhones and iDevices. And we know that if we're holding a cold beer and then we go to use our fingerprint, that it doesn't work because our fingers are wet. But the finger vein doesn't have that problem. It's contactless, touchless, reads the veins in your fingers. So will work if your finger is wet or cold or whatever. So that's the technology behind Staller. And what they've done recently is announced a deal with MasterCard.
Oh.
So MasterCard and Fingo, which is their Staller's branded solution, will use the finger vein as an authentication on their payments platform. So that partnership is going to allow Staller and Fingo to access MasterCard's global payment system, and it's currently a test, I guess, if you will, in certain markets. But we can see that sort of spreading out to MasterCard's global now.
Yeah. Do you know what? I had that issue recently. I was we got a touch heat sensitive sort of cooker system in our house, and I couldn't switch the cooker on because my hands were cold, and it was annoying me. Right? I know.
Yeah, and I mean, and the neat thing about it because you don't have those problems, right? Mm-hmm. They also use the platform for age verification. They're using it for loyalty schemes, and there's even a stadium in Australia that's using it to do vaccine verification to allow fans back into the rugby stadiums.
Yeah. Okay, and so that's one of your investments there, Staller. What other ones have you got there, then, Derek?
Well, you know what? One of the ones we're really excited about is Leaf Mobile. They're a mobile gaming company in Canada. They're Canada's largest free-to-play mobile gaming company, and they've been on a growth tear, Justin. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they've recently announced their 2020 results. They had revenue of over $80 million. That was an increase of over 115% over their 2019 revenues. In May, they began trading on the OTCQB, so access to U.S. retail investors who are very, very keen on this sector. And in June, they announced the finalizing their deal to acquire Truly Social Gaming. And if you recall, Leaf's strategy is to grow both organically and through acquisition. And the neat thing about Truly Social Gaming is they've got studios both in Vancouver and in Minsk. And then also on their growth front is their IdleKit platform. So they've got a platform that allows developers to quickly bring their idle games to market on the IdleKit platform, for which Leaf earns obviously a royalty fee. And in the first half of 2021, they've announced 8, 9, 10 IdleKit partners coming on board their platform. So really, really excited about the growth happening at Leaf Mobile.
Yeah. Wow. I just, you know, that is growth, isn't it? So just repeat that again. So they announced revenue of $80 million, and how much
$80 million.
And that was a growth of what?
A growth of about 115% over their 2019 revenues.
Wow, that is growth, isn't it? That's very impressive growth. Yeah, absolutely. Cool stuff. All right, and so looking forward, I assume you must be quite bullish looking towards the rest of the year, here, Derek.
Yeah, the challenge with investing in private companies is the valuation events come when the valuation events come. So, for example, the Dynasty valuation event came in April, May of this year. So, we have no control over that, but we see other activity happening within the portfolio and other companies having significant announcements coming up over the next 6 months.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, you know about this now, Derek. Every time on the podcast, on the daily podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies. To get on that list, people have to hit that follow button on your page. So give us three reasons, please, why someone should hit that follow button and add Blue Star Capital to their watch list, please.
Well, they should follow Blue Star Capital, not just because of me, But there's actually some sound investing reasons why I would encourage everyone to follow Blue Star Capital. One is our portfolio approach to investing. We talked about it at the very beginning of this conversation, Justin. And it's, we've got 11 companies, exposure to esports and other high growth sectors. There's no single point of failure, but lots of points of opportunity. Number two would be esports itself. We've talked about it a lot in the past, Justin, and it's worth repeating that it's a growing market that's soon going to have $1.5 billion in revenue and marching towards a worldwide audience of 650 million of audience. And the third reason is actually because of where Blue Star is in the market today. Blue Star represents an opportunistic investment based on value. We talked at the beginning of this conversation, Justin, about our net asset value being about 12 million pounds at our current trading range of 0.16, 0.17, 0.18. That represents a significant opportunity to our existing market cap. So I think for those three reasons, please hit follow.
Excellent stuff. Derek, good to chat to you. And like I say, lots going on, so no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
Yeah, I'm extremely well, Justin. You okay?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I was watching yesterday the news of Kwasi Kwarteng. It's a good name. I like that guy, actually. I think he comes across very well. He's one of the one of the politicians I sort of quite like, you know, and that's very rare. But he was outside a factory in Sunderland yesterday, the Nissan factory, which is they put £1 billion of investment into it. Yeah. I know the government taxpayers put up 100 million, I think, 10th of that. But it wasn't long back when Nissan were leaving the UK because of Brexit. I thought, that's turned around a bit. They're going to pull thousands of jobs because of Brexit. Now they're actually saying at least 1,600 are going to be employed there, and you've got the supply chain as well, so several thousand probably. So it's amazing how it's changed pre and post, isn't it?
And you know, we both, I think, try and avoid politics when it, because mixing politics and investments is a bad thing anyway, because generally you start to think along your lines of your political preference, and that's what you want to happen rather than you think perhaps might should happen, or you don't assess what's already in the price. I think that is dangerous. Also, with politics, with Brexit, you're going to upset 52% or 48% of the population straight away anyway.
Yeah.
But I think what I would say with Brexit is that whatever you think of it, remain, leave, sick to death of it, passionate about it, whatever, my personal opinion is it is a process that will take time. And although it was sold as a one-off event on a date, I think it's going to take time for us to find out whether it was good, bad or indifferent. And by the time those years have passed, it'll probably be quite tricky in some ways anyway. But I think from an investment perspective, what's intriguing is that we've just had the fifth anniversary of the vote on the 23rd of June. I didn't see a lot of press coverage about it. I suppose either people are fed up of it, come to accept it, or were still thinking about variants and other things.
Do you know what's happening,
which are,
Russ,
friends of mine, maybe.
Yeah, that thing you said is very interesting there, because when I tweeted that out earlier saying this narrative has changed, amazing how narrative changes very quickly, and someone did reply, and I thought this is very spot on. Someone said Brexit was never going to be as bad as the vote Remain said, or as good as the vote Leave claimed, you know?
There you are. I think that's right. But I think from an investment perspective, that's interesting, because if you look at how the UK performed from the 23rd of June 2016 to the 23rd of June 2021, over those 5 years, the FTSE 100 was the single worst performing major index in the world, up 12%. Wow. NASDAQ was up 190, S&P 500 doubled, Japan was up 80, the FTSE All World was up 3/4, Germany was up 50, Hong Kong was up 40, China was up by 1/4, and the FTSE 100's up 12. Now, okay, you can say I've picked my index, because the FTSE 250 was up by about 30%, and the AIM All Share was actually up nearly 70%. Yeah. So it's not just down to Brexit. It's an interesting coincidence, but Brexit may have been part of it. People were nervous about what it meant. Did they want to own sterling assets if they felt the pound was going to go through the floor? Possibly not. In December 2019, they were thinking about Jeremy Corbyn becoming Prime Minister, and given some of the fairly trenchant things that the Labour Party then had to say about business, that may have put some investors off. And obviously, we've had the pandemic. And fairly or unfairly, there was a perception last year that the UK probably hadn't done a brilliant job of handling it, at least in the early stages, even if the vaccination programme has been advanced pretty smartly. So there are other things at play, but Brexit, that word uncertainty that we banged around for 5 years, may have had a lot to do with it, as well as politics, sterling, pandemic. But the other thing that has clearly not helped the FTSE 100 is just the way the thing's constituted.
Yeah.
You know, it's packed full of miners, oils, banks, pharmaceuticals and utilities and consumer staples. So you've got plodders, or you've got things that are very cyclical, and that was at a time of great economic uncertainty, modest global growth at best, and then you got the pandemic and the deepest recession in 300 years. So you could have hardly had, in some ways, a less propitious mix. And banks certainly don't like zero interest rate or negative interest rate environments because it absolutely kills their profit margins. Yeah. So in that respect, the FTSE 100 for the last 5 years was a horrible index, and it wasn't just down to Brexit. In fact, the FTSE 100 getting 2/3 of its earnings from overseas, it's probably not much to do with Brexit at all, quite frankly. Mm. It's down to the fact that you've got mines, oils, banks, plodders. Yeah, and the world has been much more interested in high growth plays, which is why the US and Asia have generally done much better, for example.
Yeah, do you know what? I was watching CNBC, and I've seen this quite a few times recently. The fact that the S&P has done very well, and Dow and all that has done very well. I've seen increasingly fund managers come on there now saying, looking about rotating out of the US into Europe, because they're saying there are parts of Europe that they've not rallied, essentially. You know, and I'm assuming they're including UK in that as well, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Europe has habitually traded at a discount to the US, and that's always been the case. I think it's because the US is just seen as being a bit more aggressively shareholder friendly, whereas Europe has got a lot more of a stakeholder feel to it. And again, that's a matter of your political preference or philosophical preference may influence you there. So Europe is always really the discount, but the discount is particularly big right now. And I think that's what's definitely attracting some attention. And Europe is, again, like the UK, heavily plugged in to the global economy. Europe's powerhouse is Germany, and Germany is an export economy, absolutely par excellence. So if you do get a strong economic upturn, an inflationary economic upturn, you can see why Europe would outperform the US, and you can see why the UK would outperform them both. Yeah. Because again, mines and oils heavily get into any cyclical upturn. Now, and if you just look at consensus analyst forecasts for the UK, in the last 3 months alone, they've upgraded FTSE 100 earnings forecasts by a fifth and by 10% for 2022. And most of that is mining and oils and a little bit of banks. They're ferociously difficult industries to forecast, and they could and clearly the market is still thinking, because it's stuck at 7,000, not sure this is going to last, is it really? And people, and actually analysts have got mining and oil earnings going down next year because they don't think that the price rises we've seen are going to stick. But if you've got a strong inflationary recovery, they could do, because in the end, neither industry has spent much money on capex in the last 4 or 5 years. Their shareholders have told them not to, and you can't just turn on an oil well or a mine at the flick of a switch. And in the case of the oils, the International Energy Agency and all sorts of other people are saying, well, actually, this stuff's disgusting and dirty and horrible. We don't need to drill any more holes. Thank you ever so much. Yeah. So again, if you did get a strong recovery, you might not get much supply coming on stream, and that is normally a classic situation for sustained price increases. Now, I appreciate some of your listeners will be going, look, on an ESG basis, environment, social and governance, mines, oils, dirty, nasty, holes, drilling, not interested. And I thoroughly get that. And those flows have, again, worked against the UK because tobacco is a big contributor to earnings and dividends as well. So there are flows there, but those are flows that, out there, I say, are not necessarily down to the fact whether they're good or bad businesses. It's down to whether you philosophically or ethically agree with what they do. And some investors will just say, look, what I'm interested in is, do they make money? Are the stocks cheap? And if people are selling for one reason that's not necessarily purely economic, they may view that as an opportunity. And again, that's part of the argument for how perhaps that the UK is potentially intriguingly cheap if you get stuck into the inflation narrative. If you think we're going to be stuck in this, in again, the same low growth, low inflation murk that we've had for the last 10 years or even deflation, the UK, or certainly the FTSE 100, is just the wrong place to be.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is, that's interesting, is that even though investors may look at oil, you know, stocks, are they making money, or miners, are they making money? The thing is, if you've got this outflow of money because of ESG, then the multiple on which they're valued will go down, won't it? So they can be making the same amount of money, or even more money they did than 5 years ago, but their share price will not be as high because, you know.
So they've been, that's it. There's been a big derating there. Now it's up to you to think, well, will the market just take the view that actually, okay, oil is going to be around for a lot longer than we like or than we think? Yeah. So they could then enjoy your re-rating. And I think there is a possibility there, you know, that may indeed happen. And with miners, I know there are lots of people actually spin that's a green angle to mining, because without lithium, without copper, then there are no electric vehicles, and you know, without molybdenum and cobalt and all these other so somebody said that there's a green angle there too. So flows in that respect could make it difficult, but equally there'll be a lot of pragmatic investors who maybe, you know, redder of tooth and claw, and would you say, yeah, I think the price is wrong here because people are selling for reasons that aren't related to economics. So I'll tuck some away.
Yeah, well, exactly. But you know, you mentioned it before a while back when the oil was really down low, and you said, well, I think there's a bounce trade on here. It's going to happen because we still need oil, and yet it's just sentiment wise, it was in the bucket. You know, it's got to go up somewhere. You can only go so low, can't it? You know,
I mean, well, in the end, the cure for low prices is low prices, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, what you can say is, you know, if the IEA is saying, look, please don't drill any more holes, and that's going to mean high prices, and ultimately the cure for high prices is high prices, and high oil prices will make renewable alternatives look better value. So that's, you know, maybe one way in which things will balance out there. But with the UK having underperformed,
I didn't think of that. So do you know what? I just realised that.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a Machiavellian view of it, maybe. But.
So essentially, oil producers at the moment can't really win, because if the oil price goes down, they're not making as much money. If it does go up, then essentially, like I said, alternatives are more attractive because it's more expensive.
Over time, you can kind of see the direction of travel, but it doesn't mean that, you know, again, there aren't times when they're going to be undervalued because people have just kind of written them off already, which I think is still potentially premature, shall we say. And as for the UK, well, it's underperformed for 5 years. The currency is still down on where it was 5 years ago. And so lo and behold, we've had over 50 bids for UK assets, UK companies over the last 9 months, a lot of them from overseas. Only two in the FTSE 100, I admit, RSA and Morrisons, but nevertheless, the average bid premium has been 36%. So somebody somewhere thinks there's some value to be had in the UK equities because they've underperformed for 5 years and the currency's down. So again, it's the old Templeton thing. You know, you go looking where there's bad news. You don't go looking where there's good news, because bad news can mean bargains and good news can mean things that are expensive. So that's the psychological thing that's very hard. But the old saying, you can have good news and cheap stocks, just not both at the same time.
Do you know what's funny? I did a poll on Twitter and I said, well, that was Q2. How did your portfolio do? When you think of it, we had the lifting of restrictions, you know, and all that to look forward to. But you realise you rally into that. You rise in that news. Now, 16% said good, 25.7% said okay, and 58.1% said get lost Q2. So they had a bad Q2.
Wow.
When obviously the money was made earlier, and I said, you know, anyone could have started investing in March 2020 and made money. You'd have been pretty stupid not to have made money, because everything pretty much doubled since then. But now is a stock picker's market where you have to look at quality, growth, and all that stuff, because we've had the quick, easy money's been made, I think, isn't it, you know?
I think that's all you called it. You said what you saw the market going flat to down when the lockdown was going to end.
Because everyone was expecting
you called it,
wasn't they?
Because everybody was expecting it since Pfizer Monday last November, and it's not before. So, but I think the other thing just to bear in mind is that I know people are saying the inflation trade's dead. I mean, I think that's a bit premature. I mean, I think in some, you know, if you look at how markets trade in the short term, it's all down to positioning and leverage. Mm-hmm. And 9 months ago, who was positioned for an inflation trade? Nobody. You know, over the last 9 months, more and more people have crept to the inflationary side of the boat, right? So it was getting a bit top heavy.
Yeah.
The Fed came up with what was allegedly a hawkish statement, but it sounded more like a budgerigar with a cough to me. But, you know, people then went back to the middle of the boat, or maybe to the other side again, so the boat sit back the other way, because people were positioned. You know, that was the way the sentiment was leaning. But I don't think that to say that the trade is dead is correct. I think there's definitely been people who've locked in profits run for cover. But if you run the chart of the Bloomberg Commodities Index and divide it by the FTSE All World, commodities outperformed for 10 years, from 2000 to 2010, underperformed from 2010 to mid-2020, and the line is kind of bottoming and looking like, maybe. So, okay, they maybe outperformed for 6 months, but if you really do get inflation, they're really going to outperform. They're not going to just do it for 6 to 9 months. They're going to do it for a heck of a long time. So I think it's too early to say that trade is dead, and you may still be in the foothills of something that is one of those kind of, almost generational shifts that you do occasionally get, you know, because at the moment, central banks are still running policy ultra loose, governments still don't seem bothered about balancing their budget deficits, they're still keen to spend money, and that is a very different environment than we've had from a very long time. If it does lead to inflation, which has basically been dormant since the early 1980s.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you saw, you probably did, Bank of England yesterday, and then you got the Andrew Bailey saying that it's temporary. It'll accelerate this year. It's temporary. And Andy Haldane, the ex-Deputy Minister, saying, well, he was a bit more worried about it, saying it's going to hit nearly 4%. The thing is, when you nail it to the cross at that, and everyone's sort of talking about it, you're right. It never quite happens like that, does it? You know?
No, it's hard. And central banks are in a difficult position in that you know they don't want to raise interest rates because that will stop the economy absolutely dead in its tracks.
Yeah.
Because of all the debt that's out there and the debt of people and companies and the government has taken on. The government doesn't want interest rates to go up because it's going to massively increase its interest bill. And yet they might need to move interest rates up to quell inflation, which hits the least well off in society the hardest, and to maintain credibility. So they're in a bit of a cleft stick, frankly. I think in the end, when forced to make a choice, they will leave interest rates where they are, let inflation run. Because if you think about it, the best way that they can get the debt-to-GDP ratio down is let nominal GDP run. And if you've got GDP growth of 2 plus inflation of 3, 4, 5, and spending is vaguely under control, that is how you get debt-to-GDP down. It's a bit of an optical con trick, but it's a lot less visible than austerity and not building hospitals and not giving public sector pay rises and things. It doesn't mean there are any winners, because if inflation does gallop along, and it's normally shown up in things like, food or fuel, those who've got the least affordable, the least disposable income are the ones who get kicked the hardest. So there are only choices, there are not winners for all, and that's the difficult balancing. But the Bank of England, I think, will do its best, rather like Kaiser Soze in The Usual Suspect, to pretend that it doesn't exist and that they'll keep talking it down. And I think if you do see it start to gather, and you're seeing one or two Fed officials say it already, then I'm saying, it might run for a little bit longer and a little bit higher than we thought, but don't worry, it's still transitory. And I wouldn't be shocked if you got a little bit of that foot shuffling over the next 3 or 6 months.
Do you know what? It comes back to that quote that the only one thing that's certain is that nothing is certain,
There you are.
If you go by that, it should be okay.
Yeah, central bankers, they're human. They're bright, they're well-intentioned, they're doing their best, but they haven't got a crystal ball, and therefore they are not guaranteed to be right. And to base your investment strategy alone on what they say, I think the one thing I can say is they don't want stock markets to go down. And they will move heaven and earth to prevent that, which I think is what they're doing already. So that's something that we do need to be aware of. But, don't fight the Fed is a powerful mantra.
Yeah.
But, the Fed slashed interest rates in 2000 to 2002 and 2007 to 2009, didn't stop stock markets falling. So there's only so much they can do.
Yeah. Marvellous stuff. Russ, thanks for that. Have a nice weekend. Speak next week.
Have a lovely weekend.
OK, it's time for the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. There are 5. Trellis Health, up 1.45% to 70.5. At 4, Trufin, down just over 0.5% at 80 pence. At 3, Microsaic Systems, up 13.33% to 0.255. At 2, it's 88 Energy, up 20% to 2.475. And at 1, Biome Technologies, it's up 6.85% to 25%. Up 25 minutes at 390. Of course, Paul is on the podcast today, CEO. Okay, it's time for the top 5 most read RNSs. They are as follows. At 5, Bidstack Group, result of fundraise. At 4, Acustem Sciences, distribution dates for shares and ADRs in Acustem. At 3, Tizian Life Sciences, distribution dates for shares and ADRs in Acustem. At 2, it's All Active Asset Cap proposed placing, acquisition and cancellation. And at 1, Omega Diagnostics FDA submission for emergency use authorizations. Check out that list and everything else at voxmarkets.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.